Welcome to the Wheel With It podcast with your host, Devin Wieters. We're a community that is committed to celebrating diversity and inclusion, providing and promoting disability education and awareness, and having fun too. Remember to rate and review the podcast and enjoy the show.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Wheel With It. My name is Devin Wieters. Today we have Joshua Shea on the podcast. He is a pornography addiction expert. So as you can imagine, parents, you may want to listen first. He has a lot of fascinating things to share and scary things about pornography addiction and how you can get help with that. And he was a really fascinating guy. So I think you're really going to enjoy this one. So enjoy the show.
Welcome to Wheel With It. I am your host, Devin Wieters. And today we have Joshua Shea with us. How are you today, Josh?
I am doing fantastic, Devin. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show.
Tell us about yourself and then we'll go from there.
Alrighty. Like you said, my name is Joshua Shea. For 24 years, I was a pornography addict. For 22 years, I was an alcoholic. 8 years ago, I got myself into recovery and I was able to kick both of those addictions. I have been addiction free and relapse free from porn and alcohol for a little over 8 years now.
Yay. Congrats.
Thank you. 5 years ago, I started writing about my issues and started writing about porn addiction specifically. I've written 4 books to this point and I've done the TED Talk thing. I have spoken with colleges and churches and libraries giving presentations. And yeah, I try to spread information as much as I can about pornography addiction. And for the last 2 years, I have been both a pornography addiction and a betrayal trauma coach. That's how I make my day-to-day living now.
So can you, first of all, tell us some of the statistics on pornography for both men and women and how destructive it can be?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Keep in mind that a lot of these statistics are before the pandemic started. During the pandemic, a whole lot of research came to a halt. Perhaps the scariest, there are two statistics that stick out to me. The first one is from 2016, so it's already 6 years old, and it's that in the United States, across the board, men, women, old, young, no matter who you are, 18% of people in the United States reach the definition of pornography addict. And if you boil that down, even more scary to me is that 32 to 33% of men who are in the 18 to 30 year old age group. So this is 30 men who are 30 years old or younger, 32 to 33% said in one survey that they believe they either had a problem with pornography, that they were developing an addiction to pornography, or they had a full blown addiction to pornography. That's one out of three men under 30 years old who in 2016 said they had an addiction. And it's even more, I'm sure it's even more now. To me, these statistics show that we need to start talking about this. And one that I just saw recently, which applies to both men and women, which I think is fascinating. I just read a study the other day that talked about people getting divorced and what they do to try to save their marriage or what they do to try to make things better in the marriage. And a lot of people will try if their sex life is not as active or as interesting, or I don't know, as they hoped it would be. When they introduce pornography into their sex life, they become 3 times more likely to get a divorce than if they did not introduce porn into their sex life as a married couple. Now, obviously, they're not getting divorced just because of the pornography, but I think that says a lot that you are 3 times more likely to get divorced if you bring porn into your marriage. I'll tell you, Devin, I've never read a single statistic. I've never read a single report that ever says pornography is good for you. People ask me all the time, can't pornography be healthy? And that answer is If it is, I've never seen it, a scientific report.
So what about pornography and like long distance relationships? Are there any?
There's a lot of people who ask, one of the questions I get asked the most is, so whether it's long distance or close, is it okay if I take sexy pictures and send them to my boyfriend or girlfriend? Is it okay if, or if they're living together, is it okay if my husband and I, or my wife and I make sexy videos with each other and make porn? And I always say the same thing. I think that the making act of it can be very sexy. I think making the porn, if you're talking to your boyfriend or girlfriend, like over Zoom, and you're doing sexy things, that can be very good for the relationship. That can build an emotional intimacy. But don't save what you've made. If you make sexy pictures, well, do a video of you making the sexy picture. Have it streamed live. Have them there talking to you. Because really, if you are making pornography for somebody, even if it's your partner, you're still making pornography. They're still using it like it's pornography. If he or she is going to masturbate to pictures of somebody else tomorrow because you didn't send anything, and today they're masturbating to pictures of you, that's the same thing. And people sometimes think, oh, we're a couple, so it's different. So, well, what happens when you break up? Does it suddenly become pornography if you still have it? What if you gave it to your next door neighbor? Would they view it? No, it's not pornography because it's his wife or his girlfriend. Or it's not pornography because if you were to share it with your friends, your boyfriend takes some pictures of himself naked. You share it with your friends. Is that not pornography because they know you or they know him? And say, no, it's all pornography. If you use it like it's pornography, it is pornography. Have fun making the stuff. Enjoy making the stuff. That's the sexy part. That's the creative part. That's the part where you can bond and get close together. But after you and your partners are done making this stuff, destroy it because it can be used as pornography. And I think to me, that's the big thing. If you have no problems with pornography, if you're not addicted at all, if you're not experiencing as a man any kinds of erection problems, if you as a woman have no problem, you know, him having pictures of you or you having pictures of him, it can be okay. But just realize you are making pornography in that case. And it can get out there. And if he or she is not using it just for themselves, other people can see it. And they're not going to know the circumstances around creating it. So I always say it's great to make it. It's not great to keep it.
Yes, do not keep that stuff. So when did you first realize that you were addicted to pornography?
The moment that I had seen naked people on things like HBO when I was a little kid. When I was 12 years old, my cousin showed me some hardcore pornographic magazines the first time. And it was just like a light shined down. People say, how fast were you a porn addict? And after I saw hardcore pornography, I was a porn addict that day. I really was. And it was, I knew immediately I had found something special. I knew immediately that I had found something that was going, and I don't even know what 12-year-old's thinking is like anymore, but I knew that I had found something that was going to be a big part of my life. And turned out I was right. 2 years later, when I had my first drink, I was an alcoholic within 15 minutes. I found something that I knew was going to help me get through life. It was, this is different. This is special. And it wasn't until I was actually 17 or 18 years old that a group of my friends in high school, I was over at one of their houses after we had soccer practice. And one of them had a videotape, those old school VCR tapes. One of them had it for, had a porno movie and put it in the VCR. And everybody was sitting around and making jokes and laughing. And I was feeling very differently. I felt very weird being around them watching it. I didn't want to make jokes. I used pornography by myself to make myself feel better. So sitting there watching it with them who were all having fun and laughing and a good time, that's the first time I really realized that I used it differently than my friends.
What kind of steps did you take to overcome the...
Well, that's, my story is a little bit different where I ended up with these two addictions, really overloading my professional life. As I went, finished high school, did the college thing, I started as a reporter for several newspapers and magazines. I eventually worked my way up the ladder, and I got to the point where I decided I wanted to start my own publishing company. And I started operating three different magazines where I live here in New England. And that was when it started to become unmanageable, I would say, both of my addictions. And it took about 4 or 5 years of running this company, but it was a 24-hour-a-day job almost. I started neglecting my wife and kids. I started not seeing my parents. I never saw friends. My friends were only my work friends. And after 5 or 6 years of this, my drinking got so heavy, I started drinking at work. And I started to be a very bad boss. I owned 1/3 of the company. The other two or three people who owned the rest, they basically fired me. And after I got fired, my family, my friends, a couple other people basically said, you have to get yourself together. I lost the job. Even though I was part owner, I got fired. I lost the job. And it was really apparent to me that I was going to lose my family if I didn't do anything. So I went off to rehab for alcoholism. While I was there, my case manager, and I told him everything about my life because I did want to get better from the alcohol at that point. He said to me, I think you have problems with pornography. I think you're a pornography addict. I said, I don't think pornography is even real. I don't think pornography addiction is even real. He had me meet with a certified sex addiction therapist. This was out in Southern California where I was for rehab. My case manager for the alcoholism had me meet with a certified sex addiction therapist. He helped me recognize that, number one, pornography addiction is real. Number two, that there absolutely is a connection between the mental and the physical when it comes to the body. Three, that porn addiction or that addiction was a true disease. I always just thought addiction, people get themselves into addiction. They should get themselves out of it. It's actually a disease and it's not that easy. And then he made me realize, probably most importantly, that I was a pornography addict, that it predated the alcoholism, and that it probably caused more problems in my life than the alcohol. I always just thought that the porn was sort of part of my alcoholism because I was an alcoholic back to 14 years old. But once I started to get into it with him, I realized that yes, I was indeed a pornography addict. And yes, this was going to be different than the alcoholism because it was actually a bigger problem than the alcoholism.
So what kind of stuff did you do in rehab to get over the addiction?
The first thing that they teach you is that ultimately addiction and pornography addiction, alcohol addiction, whatever addiction you have, if it's video games, food, drugs, whatever, these are coping tools and these are symptoms of a bigger problem. When it comes to addiction, the source problem is usually unresolved trauma. At some point in our lives, those of us who are addicts, we had some kind of massive issue happening. It's usually abuse. For me, when I was a child, between the ages of like 5 and probably more like 3 or 4 and 7 years old, I had a babysitter when my parents were at work who assaulted my brother and I, who also emotionally and mentally was very abusive towards us. And
It
was what it was. And I've worked through it. But the thing was, I didn't work through it for over 20 years, almost 30 years. I didn't work through it. And when I finally in rehab, when they made me realize that what I needed to do was to go back and work through that stuff, I had to go back and I had to look at what was happening to 5-year-old Josh. I had to look at how 12-year-old Josh's porn use probably had exactly everything to do with coping with the fact that I was put into sexually inappropriate situations. I was involved in sexual things that no child should ever be anywhere near. But there was also the emotional and mental aspect to it. This woman who took care of me, she might put me in a dark back bedroom if I was being bad, even though I didn't know I was being bad. She might put me in a dark bedroom for 15 minutes or 4 hours. I never knew what it was going to be. There were times where she would shove me and my brother, and if she was taking care of any other kids at the time, outside. And except for lunch, we would see her again for 8 hours. it was just a bad scene, and she scared me enough that I never told my parents about it because she made me think bad things were going to happen to me and them. And that's the story with a lot of addicts and a lot of guys who are porn addicts. They all say to me, I don't have any trauma. And I have to tell them, listen, it doesn't mean that you don't have to be sexually abused to have trauma. You don't have to have your father or mother beat the crap out of you when you were a kid to have trauma. Can be that somebody close to you died. Some trauma can be that you had bullies when you were in school. As long as you have these feelings that are not resolved, that's trauma. That's sitting on a shelf in the back of your mind. And that needs to be dealt with. Most people deal with it through addiction, but you've got to go back, deal with it with a professional, a coach, a therapist, a psychiatrist, whatever it is. Have them guide you through it, work your way through it. And what's interesting is that you find once you've dealt with the core problem, those symptoms like addiction are not as strong as they once were.
So did the babysitter ever get caught or anything?
No. And by the time that I got to rehab, like 25 years later, she was already dead. So there was nothing that
could happen. Oh, okay.
I don't know what statute of limitations are. All I would do these days is make sure she wasn't taking care of anybody else. And then because I wouldn't have wanted to try to prove that she did it.
Oh, no.
Earlier.
Because, 25 years.
As long as she wasn't taking care of anybody else, I would have let it go. Because the thing was, keep in mind, this was the early 80s. And this kind of stuff, we didn't talk about mental health. We didn't talk about the only child sex abuse you ever heard of was the really nasty stuff where someone was kidnapped and held as a hostage and that kind of stuff. I have a feeling that you go back to the 1970s, you go back to the early 80s, I have a feeling there are a lot of people just like me who went through a lot of similar things. And fortunately, I dealt with it. And fortunately, I was able to get through it. And that's what I'm trying to do today, because you take everything that happened to me, but if 12-year-old Josh would have discovered the internet, if 12-year-old Josh would have found some of these websites with pornography, oh my goodness, I can't imagine how worse off I'd be today, Devin. We give every kid the most magical porn computer ever created with their cell phone or their smartphone, and we don't give them any guidance. It's like, here's your phone, go out, have a good time in the world. And they can, if you can, it's a joke, but if you can spell man, sex, girl, man, sex, woman, you can find it. And gee, I would think anybody who's 10 years old can spell man, sex, and woman.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about the phones and how, like, they become so bad, because I have a phone right here, but.
Yeah. The thing is, for years and years, creating pornography was expensive. You go back to the 1950s, pornography films were shown in theaters like other films. And the only way you could see them was to go and buy a ticket. The only people who went and bought tickets to these were straight white men. So through the 50s, 60s, 70s, up through the 80s, most pornography companies only created porn for straight white men. They knew that they could get that audience. They could capture that audience. So there was porn addiction among this group, because porn was always created for people who were like me, a straight white male. Fast forward to the mid to late 90s, when the internet and high speed internet more specifically started catching on. Now that you can start streaming video, you can get all kinds of people to watch. You and I sitting here miles apart from each other could literally cast a movie, could edit a movie, and could get a movie out tonight that's pornographic, because you can do everything remotely now. We could have a movie up on one of these websites making money today. We don't have to try to get the straight white man to watch pornography anymore. We can make pornography for lesbians, or we can make pornography for black men, or for Indian people, or for whoever. You can very narrow cast, because it doesn't cost a lot of money to make pornography these days. You don't have to get it into a theater. You don't have to sell tickets. All you have to do is get it online and start having some clicks. So that's what the pornographers are doing. But now the pornographers are everybody. At the beginning, there's a scary statistic. On January 1st, 2020, just as the pandemic was starting over in China, there was 300,000 people making pornography on OnlyFans. 2 years later, January 1st, 2022, there were over 2 million people making pornography on OnlyFans. So during the pandemic, 1.7 million people worldwide started making pornography and selling it from their own home. And that's,
dang,
that to me is the scary part, is that we don't know what happens when this many people make pornography. I have a feeling some of these people will become addicted to making the pornography. And we live in a world, Devin, when you think about it. When I was in high school, there was no internet, so there was no social media. If there was this sexy cheerleader girl and the super buff football quarterback who were dating each other, if they had gone to the beach and someone took a picture of them and him in his short shorts or in her bikini, that would have been passed around at school like it was money. People would have been paying to see that picture. That was in the mid-90s. Now, fast forward 25 years, and all of a sudden, every kid who's 16, 17 years old who has Instagram is almost expected to have these half-naked pictures of yourself. You can go see girls in bikinis, 12, 13, 14 years old. You can go see these guys who are looking good, 15, 16 years old, on Instagram now. And if that's the attitude and that's what the youngest generation is growing up with, tell me, if you're a woman who's 17 years old, you've been blasted with pornographic images from the internet, you've been putting up bikini photos of yourself for 5 years. Now, suddenly, a picture of you taken in your bikini, which doesn't faze you at all of a sudden now you can take your top off and men will pay $20 each to see that. If you can get only 50 men in the entire world, if you can get 50 men to do that, that's $1,000 for showing a picture of your breasts. And I know a lot of women will jump at that in a second. And we're seeing that with OnlyFans. We're seeing that with these cam sites. And to me, the danger is not really in the movies that are being made out in Hollywood, because a lot of those movies aren't being made anymore. A lot of people don't recognize this, but the kind of mainstream pornography go-to for over 60 years was Playboy magazine. Playboy magazine isn't even made in the United States anymore. It stopped production during the pandemic. Most people don't realize this because they stopped reading it. They're now online. And when they're being online, you get these amateur films. You get this stuff that we don't know where it's from. You get this stuff of people just making it at their home. Hey, like I said earlier, you and your boyfriend make a porno. Well, a few months later, you break up. Then a few months after that, he's like, screw this, I'm going to put this online. And suddenly there's a picture of you. There's a video of you and your boyfriend having sex all over the internet. That's what's happening these days. I'm far more concerned with the average person starting to make porn and the average person watching this type of pornography, because it becomes just so normalized. And we know, based on looking at the health of people like me who are a little older, based on the health of guys who are even older than me and women who are even older than me, that pornography addiction over the long term is a very unhealthy thing. Being exposed to these movies, to these films, to these pictures, as a kid, the average kid starts watching porn now at 11 years old. We don't know exactly what this does to them on the long term now, but we're starting to understand, and it's not good. It's not healthy.
I can't even imagine if my parents had found me watching porn. I can't. I would still be not having a phone.
When I lived at my parents' house, when I was a teenager, I found a store that would sell me Playboy magazines, and I had them in one box in my room. I moved out of my parents' house when I was 18, and they moved all my stuff to their basement. My mom was cleaning up my basement when I was 24, and she said, I found a box that had 10 Playboys in it. Do you want to explain this to me, young man? And I'm like, young man, I'm 24 years old. I've not lived at home for 6 years. She's like, you had pornography. I was like, 6 years after moving away. she had to know that I was probably sexually active, but she still got mad that she found Playboy magazines even 6 years after I left the house.
No, I don't think that, not that I have it, but I don't think they'd be as mad today. But if I was 11 and do it, no, that's a completely different.
You bring up a great point there, Devin. What we need to do is recognize 11 and 12 year olds are starting to watch porn. So if you have children who are 11 or 12, you have to talk to them about it. And so many parents I talk to either think that if they put filters on their kids' phones or kids' laptops, that's going to be okay. But the reality is your child is going to see pornography. It's not a matter of if they see pornography. It's a matter of when they see pornography. And how prepared are they for that? So many parents are afraid to talk to their children about pornography when you have to realize the pornography speech is not the birds and the bees speech. The pornography speech is much like the drinking speech or the smoking cigarette speech. We don't do that in this house. This is not healthy for you. When you are older, you can make your own decisions. But right now, you should do that because we don't look at porn in this house. That's what you have to say as a parent. It's not a matter of when you look at pictures of a man doing this and a woman doing that. You don't have to talk about the content of the pornography. You and I have been having a conversation now for half an hour. We haven't talked about what is in pornography at all because we don't have to. We can talk about it as adults. And that's what this world needs to recognize. If we're going to take care of this issue, we need to start talking to children about it. And it doesn't have to be graphic. Kids want to learn. Kids want to know the right thing to do. And if you tell them, hey, you can tell a 5 or 6 year old kid, hey, if you have a phone or you have a tablet or you're with a friend and you naked pictures of people and they look like they're hugging and they're kissing, why don't you let me know you saw that? Because kids aren't supposed to see this stuff. So I want to make sure that you stay safe. Let me know if you see that kind of stuff. You say this to a 5 year old very calmly, very safely. You don't scare them. They're going to come and tell you when they see pornography, because that's what kids do. They listen to their parents for the most part. It's not till they're older that they stop. But so many parents would rather put their head in the sand and pretend that the stuff doesn't exist than actually prepare their child for it. But to me, that's the real crime.
That's crazy. Very well said, but that's crazy that they look at it that, do you think this is, I doubt 5 year olds are seeking out porn.
But how many times have you been on a website and something sexy pops up or something that looks like it could be pornography pops up as an ad? And you click on that and you click on the ad from there and the ad from there. And it's not hard with a couple of clicks to end up on a pornography site. And if there's a 5 year old kid who's curious, they can probably find porn on accident, but very easily.
There are so many sex advertisements now. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I've had to really work to filter those out because I don't like to look at them. And I'm like, I don't want to know about what other people do. No.
Well, that's the case of TikTok. One of the things I hear now, I'm coaching porn addicts a lot now. And they're like, I always start with TikTok. I'm on TikTok and I see a pretty girl. I'm on TikTok and I see a guy working out, depending on what they like. And then I starts to take over. You can actually make your TikTok stream not have pornography or sexy images in it. You have to work at it a little bit, but you can. I look at TikTok. I don't have any of those images because I worked my feed and I curated my feed so I wouldn't see that kind of stuff.
It takes a few days, but I've done it myself. You can curate all the bad stuff out. You just have to skip the one, and you have to skip and or block the ones that, are bad.
It takes work. I look at my TikTok. I don't worry that some bouncing around is going to be on there. I don't worry that I'm going to see some kind of sexual images. I don't get triggered very much anymore, but that's because I also make sure that I avoid the kind of things that once triggered me. People talk about, how do I get over porn addiction? You never truly get over porn addiction. You get wired a certain way, but what you can do is you can deal with that trauma of why you became a porn addict, and then you can have some tools to stay away from it and some cognitive behavioral tools or some dialectical behavioral tools that help you to stay away, and you learn how to stay away from it. And that's what I've had to do. And I just wish that back in the early 80s, somebody would have been talking to 5-year-old Josh about this or 10-year-old Josh about this. Maybe I would have still ended up a porn addict. I don't know. But I never really had any information that suggested it was bad. I didn't use drugs. I got that message. They told me not to run away if I saw cocaine, run away if I saw heroin. I never used drugs in my life that were like that. Clearly, I got the message. What if I had been given a message about pornography? Would I have stayed away? Or would I have at least, I probably would have been curious, but would I have at least not ended up being an addict? I don't know, but that's why I'm out there talking about this stuff now. If I can help a few more people, whether they're parents with their kids, or whether they are 15 or 18 or 22, just getting into it. If I can help a few people, that makes me feel great, because nobody was really able to help me because nobody was talking about this back then. And nobody was talking about mental health back then, much less things like pornography. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't want to watch those things either, but I'm going to be out there telling people these can be very harmful for you, depending on exactly who you are.
Do you have any statistics on, because do you watch that show 48 Hours at all, that murder mystery show? They did a whole thing on OnlyFans, basically, and the amount of money that people can make on OnlyFans is so crazy. I was like, and this was a joke, and people are making gods of money on OnlyFans. Are there any statistics about how much OnlyFans make?
Well, because it's a privately owned business, and because it's based out of the UK, there are not many statistics there unless the actual creators share how much money they make. And that's where we can see the money being made. And like I said, that example I gave a few minutes ago where a girl drops her top and 50 guys spend $20 on it, and that's $1,000. There are people who are making $5,000 to $10,000 a day doing this. Absolutely. Because think about it. If I make, let's say I make a porno video of myself masturbating, not that anybody would want to watch that, but if I make that video and then I charge $25 and 400 people are into it, 400 people is not a lot of people in this big wide world. If 400 people are willing to spend $50 for my video, I've just made $20,000.
Oh my gosh. That is just...
If let's say one of the things that people who are very big with OnlyFans do, they actually, it's not that they try to hide it at all. They start with people they know because people are more apt to purchase. If it's that girl who was super pretty in high school or that man who was super handsome in high school, if suddenly they decide they're going to do OnlyFans, who's going to want to watch more than the people they went to school with? Let everybody know you went to school with, hey, I'm naked online. I guarantee you're going to have quite a few people paying up, because $30, $40, $50 isn't really that much money. And if this was a girl who, like, I had a crush on or I thought was beautiful, or if it's a guy that a girl was just pining over in high school, now they're available online naked in a video for $50. I can finally see what my crush or this person I like, what they look like. That's easy money in a lot of cases. So you could make a $50 video, sell it to 400 people, and boom, there's $20,000.
Wow. I really hope we don't have any problems with this live stream, because I think this is one of the best interviews I think we've done, because it's so informative, but scary at the same time.
And that's the thing, is that it's one of these things that a lot of people don't want to talk about it, because we've been taught as a society not to talk about sex, not to talk about, or good, normal people don't talk about sex. Good, normal people don't talk about nudity. We don't talk about these things. And what is pornography? It's naked people doing naked people things. It's sexy people doing sexy people things. Sometimes it's the people next door putting a video up online and you watching it. We don't talk about these things because we're afraid to, as a society, especially here in the United States. And it's just one of these things where it's a shame, because until we can grow up and talk about sex and talk about pornography, addiction is always going to be a very quiet side thing that people are suffering with. And that's why I'm out there talking about it. And I wish there was more people. I got onto TikTok in December of last year. People are watching this in the future. We're shooting it in the July of the following year. So I've only been on TikTok 6 months, and I've got 100,000 people who want to hear what I have to say.
Dang.
That's amazing to me. I've got over 100,000 people who want to hear what I have to say. We are so starved for information, and younger people in school are so starved for information. You go to a health class or whatever, hygiene class or whatever they call it these days in high school, they'll talk to you about drugs and alcohol. They'll talk to you about eating disorders. They'll talk to you about these kinds of things, but they won't talk about sexually based addictions. And it's not just porn. There's obviously the big one is intercourse addiction is the big one. That's what most people, when they say sex addiction, it's about intercourse addiction. But things like voyeurism, things like exhibitionism, that are also sexual addictions that certain people have that we need to deal with. When I was in, I went to rehab for alcohol 2014, I learned about my sex addiction, my porn addiction. Then I came back home to New England and I was in therapy for about 7-8 months. And then my therapist said to me, I think you would benefit going to another rehab for porn addiction. And I was, okay, you think so? Yes, because you haven't used in a while. So it might be a good thing to go do that. I went off to that rehab and I hadn't touched porn in 7-8 months at that point. And I could see people who were just coming off of it and just how major a problem this was, just how insidious this addiction was. And it felt so good to be around people not being judged, not being embarrassed, not feeling awkward, because we all had the same problem. And that's why I'm out there talking these days. That's why I offer my coaching, is because I know how rough it is out there. And I think that along with going through all the certifications and learning the professional side of things, I also did it on my own. And I had to go through these rehabs. I had to learn this. And people out there who are listening to us right now, if they don't believe that pornography addiction is real, it is absolutely real. And it was probably, like I said earlier, worse than my alcoholism as far as the problems that it caused. And I think a lot of it was because nobody talked about sex when I was younger. Nobody talked about pornography. Nobody talked about what it could do to you. And yes, 4 out of 5 people will not become addicted. But for that 1 out of 5, that's still a lot of people. We need to get this information out there.
That's crazy, but that's good. It's good. Is there anything else you would like to add before we go?
All I want to tell people is that don't tell yourself there's no way you could be an addict. If you look at my clients, they range in age from 18 years old up until the 60s. When I was in rehab and I'm also doing other things, I've met people. I know that there are porn addicts as young as the early teens. There are porn addicts into their 80s. That's men and women. It's not just a certain type of person. It is professional people, lawyers, doctors, nurses, teachers. Anybody can be a porn addict. And if you're asking yourself, do I have a problem with porn? Odds are you do, because I bet you don't ask yourself, do I have an addiction to vacuuming? Do I have a problem? Do I have a problem with showering? No, you don't. You don't ask yourself if you do. If you're asking yourself if you have a problem, you probably do. Check in with somebody who knows what they're doing, and they can probably, even if you're not an addict, there are some times where somebody will come to me and I'll talk to them and I'll tell them, I don't think you're addicted. I really don't. I think you maybe are leaning on it in a rough time of not having a girlfriend or boyfriend. But I don't think you're addicted. If you think you have a problem, it's safer to find out than ignore it. Because I knew I had a problem and I ignored it for years and years, much to my detriment. But hey, if I didn't have this problem, I wouldn't have been sitting here talking to you today now. So maybe it was all worth it. It was probably all worth it.
And thank you so much for talking to us. Where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. TikTok's the big place now. My handle there is that corn coach.
Corn.
Because you can't say the P word on Instagram on TikTok. So it's that corn coach.
Yeah, I was titling the stream and I was gonna be like how to beat porn addiction, but I'm like, can we say that? No, addiction.
Corn is a code word that we use on TikTok. You can find me on Instagram at the letter P as in pornography, P addict recovery. And then my website is the same thing, paddictrecovery.com.
Okay. And all those links will be in the show notes. And thank you guys for listening. We will see you next.
Thanks for listening to Wheel With It. You can support the show by visiting our website, wheelwithit.com, following us on social media, and financially supporting us. You can find all those links in the show notes. See you next time.